Hi there and thanks for joining us. Coming up on this episode, the cosmetics plant that's been reborn on Cork's north side, what businesses can do to really go green, and after 10 successful years, we ask where next for the Ignite programme at UCC. I'm Jonathan Healy and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Now, a Cork-based company has launched a new luxury skincare range, no less, specifically designed for mature skins like mine. Linus Life, which has an office at the Kilbarry Business Park, has teamed up with Rani Dabray, who's based in Limerick, on the range. It's called Naira Beauty. And to tell me a little bit more about it is Aidan Corcoran, who is the CEO of Linus Life. Aidan, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on the show today. So it's a pleasure.
No, it's lovely to talk to you. Now, how did you manage to fall into the idea of luxury skincare?
Well, it's a long story, but just to kind of keep it brief and short, you know, my background is I'm a mechanical engineer. So as far from beauty as you can get.
Well, I mean, obviously, the entire conversation around the site would have focused on skincare, I'm guessing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what's it called? We acquired the old Yves Rocher plant here in Kilbarry, up in Blackpool, and for the last 3 to 4 years, we've been building an operation here where we do over 60% to 70% of kind of the Irish brand owned skincare and tanning and sunless tanning brands. And we're a contract manufacturer, so we work a lot with private label brands and those that you see in supermarkets and you know, yellow labels, etc., our own labels, I should say. So over the last number of years, however, we said, look, we've a lot of formulation expertise, a lot of goods, what I call skills in the area. We know what the market is doing. We know what people need and want. And also we've a kind of a passion for it, in the sense of we've a passion for kind of bringing stuff and creating here in Blackpool. And the team, actually the formulations team, is based here. There's 8 of them based here in Blackpool. So they came to me about a year ago, and this was in the height of the pandemic, with kind of thoughts and ideas about, you know, something that we could really add value about. That's what the company's for. We're trying to just add to how people feel, look, and live. And we said, look, a really nice luxury skincare, not necessarily luxury, but just high end, bringing together kind of some of the, what I call, nicest raw materials that we could get that basically can add to your kind of skin, add to your kind of the way you look and feel, and hydrate you, and actually add to, as we get a million older, Jonathan, I'm told, and now I'm not the doctor, I'm the engineer, but I suppose as an engineer, I can understand the mechanics of it. Is that when we get older, our cells and our skin, etc., it just, look, it takes longer to recover. That's both male and female. And, you know, the cells don't bounce back as well,
Tell the crow's feet around my eyes all about it. Every time I see myself smiling these days, I go, what's after happening to the side of your face there? You look like you're melting.
That's grown old gracefully, yes. You see, Johnson.
So I'm told. Tell me how you met Rani Dabray and what Rani brought to the project.
So Randy, you know, look, and as for that, you know, we, you know, it's fine us having a bunch of scientists and engineers and technical people here that know what's good and what are the raw materials to use and understand that. But understanding the key demographic of who's and what are out there to really kind of that have needs and wants and have a passion for stuff like this and in a sense like or products like this with regards to it. And that's really where Rani came in. Rani and I are both entrepreneurial in a sense. I own a number of businesses. This is the one I run full time day to day, but I would have met Rani over the last number of years. She's a very successful businesswoman, very successful entrepreneur that has started and moved a number of businesses and has a clothing range out of the UK. Rani and I would have met, you know, many, many, many times and discussed maybe projects that we'd like to do together. She's a passion for what I would call brands and stuff that can add value to how people feel as well. And that, and so she felt there was a demographic, a group of people in the kind of what I would call this where we're beginning to get that billion older, I suppose, the 40 plus kind of category. And what's happening is that beauty care and cosmetics is very much focused on, you know, trying to, you know, look as young as possible. And she felt, well, look, that's not necessarily, doesn't have to be the case. We can be beautiful and we can age beautifully, and we can we add more, we bring a lot more as we get more mature.
And can I ask a question, Aidan? Is it male and female target market here, or is it exclusively female?
Right now, it's not exclusively female, but we are targeting the female market in the sense that the products are designed for the female audience. However, you know, we've got retinoids and hyaluronic acids. All of these are very famous, etc. kind of things that have been bounced around now. But we brought in quite a significant amount of what I call high-end raw material for it. And I guess ultimately the surprise for me is that it's been picked up by a male audience too. And actually, you know, so I mean, would you believe I'm actually using it myself, trying to cut down on my own cold feet. I'm a big beardy guy, by the way, Jonathan, so I doubt, to be honest with you, I don't know, will it be noticed before the beard, but it's primarily targeted at what I would call, and when I say targeted at, for the female audience, and for the mums out there and for the kind of sisters.
Aidan,
you know?
you're on very thin ice by targeting it at mature skins, because the definition of whose skin is mature and whose isn't is very much up for discussion.
Well, we're all mature, you know what I mean? And I suppose I've been skating on thin ice probably since my 20s, Jonathan, you know what I mean? So I'm more than welcome to willing to have a discussion with anyone as well. That I guess ultimately, as we go, remember, we bring a lot of positivity with that. And there's something nice that if we can focus on, you know, I often say around here, you know, we did a lot, all of us, anyone that has in my generation now, I'm 40s and going into my 50s, I guess, and stuff like that. And as I use different products, you know what I mean, there are different times as I grow and my tastes have changed, my needs have changed and stuff like that. And I guess ultimately that's the same for both men and women of that age. And this particularly is kind of skewed at that particular age group, that can help them out and kind of add value to what they're
doing. I've given you a full mark there for avoiding the dirty question that I threw at your direction, right? Aidan, what I like about this story is not just the product, which is obviously a great thing that you're getting this to market, but also that you have repurposed a facility that probably otherwise would have gone idle, I'm guessing, the Yves Rocher plant.
Yeah, look, we would you believe we won private label investment of the year last week only. We haven't hit the press with that one yet, but what you call it, it was because we acquired the Yves Rocher plant. I think at the time we now have 70 people here on site in Cork. We have 40 in Mayo. And we grew that from a base here when they wound up. It went to zero, obviously, but we hired back 25 to 30 of the previous staff. And so we have a great team here in Cork. I'm actually sitting here in Cork today. I do 3 days a week here. And the funny thing is the irony of ironies is that we have Yves Rocher himself, Monsieur Yves, used to have a shop in Oliver Plunkett Street and down there in town. And we're going to open up a pop-up shop for Naira Beauty later before Christmas. So it's going to be quite a nice closing of the circle to think that we're doing something similar to what the original site founder did here. And and I'm proud. You know, I'm what I would call an accepted new resident of Cork now. So what you call it, I'm proud to do that. You know what I mean? And I'm enjoying my time down here.
Sure that as long as Cork don't ever play Mayo in the All-Ireland final, which is unlikely at the moment, let's face it, you'll continue to get away with that.
They might enjoy the game because we're not renowned for pushing on through sometimes.
you always get to the final, God love you. The Naira Beauty range is going to be available online primarily ahead of that shop opening. It's nyrahbeauty.com. Look, it's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. Well done on winning that award, and continued success to you and the team in Blackpool. Aidan Corcoran, CEO of Linus Life, thanks for joining us on Red Business, Aidan.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Nice to join you. Thank you.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.
Eamon Curtin of the Ignite program at UCC is with me now. Eamon, happy birthday.
Jonathan, thank you very much for that. Yes, we're really pleased to be celebrating 10 years of Ignite this year.
And it's been a very successful 10 years as well. 250 jobs, 16 million raised in funding, and loads of new businesses released into the wild. It just shows you that universities have a real role to play in culturing a little bit of entrepreneurship amongst those who are just hitting the world of work.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things that we need to consider. On the one level, we've got just on UCC campus alone, we've got 100 million euro worth of research activity going on every year. But we need people who are going to bring that research output out into the world have economic, social and environmental impact with it. On the other hand, we've got 22 and a half students that, again, on the UCC campus, clearly we've more in MTU, who are, I'm going to say, have the opportunity on campus to bounce off each other, to come up with ideas, to be innovative, to be creative, to try stuff. So what Ignite is really about is giving those folks the opportunity to test ideas, to try ideas, to harness that research and to have impact.
And of course, it's not just about UCC. You do bring in graduates from other colleges and universities as well. So you're trying to bring in some of the best and the brightest to work out at UCC.
No, absolutely. The programme is open to recent graduates from any third level institution in the country. And really pleased to say that we get a great mix every year.
We're looking at 10 years. So it started just as we emerged from the deepest, darkest recession. So it's kind of gone through Brexit. It's towards, hopefully, the end of a pandemic. Have you seen that period and the companies coming through reflected in it? In other words, have you seen change in the type of businesses being brought forward?
I think, yeah. We've seen changes in the types of businesses, no question. I think more interestingly, though, we've seen changes in what is motivating people to bring those business ideas forward. So in the early stages, as you say, 2010, 2011, which is when the first program ran, it was really a response to support talented graduates who were unable to find jobs at that point in time, to keep them in the economy, to keep them in the region, to support them to start new businesses and create new jobs of their own. What we've seen since then, I guess, is ambition has increased. People are not just looking to create jobs for themselves and their friends, but maybe to go beyond that, to create high potential startups, as Enterprise Ireland would have it, to want to create tens, 20s, 30s and beyond in terms of jobs, to raise significant levels of venture capital investment and to have true global impact. So if anything has changed, I think the level of ambition of the young founders we work with has.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good technology companies coming through, but it's not all technology. It's almost about the application of that technology. You've had loads of real clever medtech kind of ideas coming through, software as a service ideas coming through as well. And every single one of them has the potential to be a global product.
Yeah, I mean, the key thing that we talk to the guys about is scale. You know, how can you scale your business? And what will tend to happen is that the technology will be what allows the business to scale. And the Irish market being the size that it is, scale necessarily involves global markets and exporting, which is the challenge then that many of our startups have is how to sometimes maybe even recognize that the local market is not the starting place, because it's just not big enough to start, and that they need to be growing from day one as global businesses.
One of the things I've consistently said when I've worked with you guys in Ignite, and I've been the host of a couple of your events there, your award ceremonies, is that when I was in college, which is quite some time ago, Eamon, the idea would be that you get your degree now, off with you. That's changed, hasn't it? Because the universities, and not just UCC, but a lot of universities has realised the value in holding on to students who've got good ideas to help them develop through the university. That's been a game changer, even in mindset.
Yeah, but I think what's happening is realising that there's a far wider range of career opportunities for graduates, so open to graduates on graduation, and that one of those career opportunities is being innovative, being creative, starting a business, and creating sustainable jobs and products and services that can have impact, and that is now considered to be a valid career opportunity for recent graduates when that wouldn't have been the case 10 or 15 or 20 years ago.
I know it's not fair to ask you, do you have a favourite? It's like asking a parent for a favourite child, but have you a standout company that you look back and going, well, that's exactly the poster child we want for the Ignite programme?
Yeah.
See, I love the way that she said, yeah, they're going, why did you ask me that question?
Yeah, look, I mean, there isn't a straight answer to that question. We have had some wonderful examples, and the likes of Sinead Blyle with Anabio Technologies and Fiona Edwards Murphy with Apis Protect come to mind, of female PhD graduates that take some aspect of their research and turn that into a global business. We've some great examples of undergraduate students and say Conor Lydon's trust app, where it was an academic module where they were encouraged to come up with a problem that they could solve that had the potential commercial, that started Conor on the road to develop trust app, which now has nearly 30 staff and is building an office in Croatia, I believe. We've had wonderful examples of guys like Danny O'Donovan that came with an idea, and Ryan O'Neill of LegitFit, and Danny's Quick Minutes, that came with a problem to solve that they had experienced in their own areas of interest, and wanted to build a business out of that. And to be fair, we've had wonderful examples also of people that have come to us with the business to start, and over the course of the program actually identified that that business idea wasn't going to be the thing that they were going to develop, but took the skills that they had learned and used those into early stage companies. So, for example, some of the people that were on Ignite became chief technology officers, or chief marketing officers, or whatever, of some of the other startups that we've supported. And that all came about through the networks and the interaction that they had.
Which is part of the wider education that I'd imagine that you get with it. Where next for it, though? You've 10 years done now. Can you see this evolving in any way to meet a changing need?
We continue to. I mean, the needs change on a regular basis, and we continue to evolve the program. We've got specific plans for the next 3 years, I guess, which primarily fall on are about two things. What are we doing to ensure that the startups that result from the program are stronger when they result from the program and more likely to survive? So that's about how do we continue to enhance the way that we structure the program, the workshops, the seminars, the guest speakers and the mentors that we use, and how can we ensure that the people going through the program get the supports they need at the time that they need it. The second thing is, how do we work more with our undergraduate and postgraduate students so that we end up with what I would say is better developed ideas and better prepared individuals that are coming through to apply to Ignite. So we've got specific plans around how we develop both of those over the years ahead.
Well, we look forward to hearing all of those companies coming through and watch with great interest. And we've spoken to a few of them on the podcast already, those companies that have passed through Ignite and are going on to better and brighter things. Eamon Curtin of the Ignite program at UCC, thanks so much for joining us, Eamon.
Thank you, Jonathan. Take care.
The only show in town for Cork business. Red Business.
Climate change, greenhouse gas emissions, temperature increases, all high on the news agenda for the last little while after COP26. And householders are being bombarded with lots of advice that they can do with to live more sustainably. So we thought it would be worth looking at some of the steps that businesses in Cork could be taking to improve their green credentials. Save a few bob as well, which is probably a better incentive. John Drynan is business manager at Electric Ireland, based here in Cork. John, how are you?
Great, thanks. And thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's lovely to talk to you. We're slow to this, aren't we, in this country? Because we were used to doing it one way and our perception was that all the other ways were very expensive. And as a result, we could be doing more.
Yeah, certainly. And look, I suppose the whole area in terms of for SMEs and for business in general, the whole area of energy efficiency and savings, you know, it's nothing new, certainly from our perspective. We've been preaching this probably for the best part of four decades. But I suppose you've got a kind of combination of things that are coming together, both on the energy efficiency and the green agenda and sustainability. So the reality is that, you know, any effort that you make to try and save energy saves you money and is also good for the planet and is helpful to the environment. So, you know, from individual business owners, there are, you know, many simple things that you can do. And the first thing that we would always obviously suggest would be to the business owner, you know, examine your electricity bills over the last 12 months, for example, and look to see you can see in terms of comparing your MIC level against your maximum demand, and there are savings that can be made there. And also, if you look at your bill and if you see any low power factor charges, they're easily enough to be eliminated on your site, you know, talk to your local electrician. So these are kind of general energy efficiency, basic stuff that you do off the top. Beyond that, you're moving into, sustainability. And what can you do in terms of any individual items of plant within your factory or in your business premises? And what we see, you know, historically, what's well known is lighting, for example. There are huge savings to be made in changing lighting to LED lights. It's up to 80% savings on lighting alone. And lighting in general for most SMEs is about 40% of your overall costs. So any savings that you can make there is just money straight off your bottom line.
The thing is that people are, again, slow to this, right? I put solar panels on my home and I'm fascinated as to why this isn't being done more widely. And there are things like that that businesses probably should be encouraged to do more of, but haven't quite taken on yet. Like the LED thing is a no-brainer at this point. Anything that produces heat, as a rule, is very heavy on electricity. So like a simple review of processes could actually result in lower fuel bills and lower electricity bills.
Yes, absolutely right. And even moving your usage to nighttime usage, because rates are generally, any tariff is energy is cheaper at night. Anything that you can, you know, move your process to nighttime electricity is obviously going to save money. But equally, again, you know, there are simple, you know, tactics that can use in terms of, you know, one degree less in your thermostat can save you up to 10% savings in the year. So the great thing about electricity is that it's ultimately controllable. So, you know, you can buy sensors for your lighting and controls for your heating that ultimately will get your costs down. And always remember, in terms of with any capital costs, you know, no matter what a business premises will buy, whether it's high efficiency motor or changing out lighting, the running cost of that item of equipment will be far in excess of the capital cost.
Yeah.
So always look to buy the most efficient, energy efficient appliance or process that you can, because that saves you money in the long run.
When we hear things like the Climate Action Plan and how people are going to have to pay extra in carbon taxes and all of the negativity that tends to surround the conversation, you know, one thing that is always a good idea for business is to take stock of where you're doing and what you're doing and how you're doing it. Am I wrong in thinking a lot of businesses would probably be surprised if they just stopped for a moment and considered actively how much energy they're consuming?
I agree, absolutely. Businesses will always have safety as part of their, you know, if you have a monthly meter, a monthly agenda, safety would be on the agenda. We would always maintain that energy efficiency and energy should be on that agenda. And, simple things, many business owners obviously are juggling a lot of plates and, you know, very busy. But what we would suggest is for them to appoint an energy champion. Nominate somebody in the staff within your company that has an interest, and let's face it, at this stage, who hasn't got an interest in energy efficiency and climate change. And for that person, to take steps or whatever they need to try and focus in on energy efficiency. And there's a lot of online tools that can help for that. For example, the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland have a great website with very useful hints and tips on that. And equally, in terms of on the whole online side of it, we in Electric Ireland, we have a business online, which is a portal for our customers where they can interrogate and view and download for easy reports that are there on the system for them to review their energy consumption. We have another system called Premium Insights, whereby business customers can do peer-to-peer comparisons against similar businesses.
Okay.
And a lot of hints and tips and that. So there's a wealth of resources there for them online.
But the bottom line is we've spent enough years ignoring this, and it was always someone else's problem, and it could be pushed down the road. Is your message today, stop pushing it down the road, deal with it now, because if you don't deal with it now, it's going to hit you where it hurts, which is in your pocket?
Yes, absolutely. So you've got a combination of factors that have come together in terms of, say, energy efficiency saves your money. It's economically beneficial to you as a business, but it also, you know, supports the green agenda. And I think, you know, if you look further down the line, there have been huge advances in terms of, you know, decarbonizing the grid over the last number of years. It's decarbonized by more than 50%, even, you know, in the last figures by CRU in 2020. But I think the holy grail in terms of, there's a silent revolution going on in the energy industry. And the holy grail of that, I suppose, you know, in the next number of decades would be the development of a hydrogen economy. So you would have seen a lot of reports in the papers about this move to offshore wind energy. So a hydrogen economy, I suppose, in the long term, if you visualize a scenario where you've got significant amounts of offshore wind feeding into electrolyzers, which simply convert that electricity and make hydrogen from it. So again, green, clean hydrogen. And that hydrogen is used to fuel transport, heavy goods vehicles. It's used in some parts of industry as required. And, you know, even at the moment, you can inject up to 20% of hydrogen into the gas network, and, you know, appliances, domestic appliances can handle that. But the long-term vision is to actually convert, you know, that gas network to be running on hydrogen, and for that hydrogen to fuel thermal power stations. So effectively, everything is clean and green electricity. And at that stage, really all you want to do is to put a plug on everything, because if the grid is that completely green, or, you know, as near as possible, technically feasible to get to that amount of cleanness, then anything you plug into that would automatically be carbon free.
And of course, the one thing we have a lot of is wind, particularly offshore. If we can just harness it in some way, we'll be as good as the Saudis were with oil back in the day. John Drynan, absolute pleasure to talk to you. Business manager at Electric Ireland. All the contact details are on electricireland.ie. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you, Jonathan. Take care. Bye now.
My thanks, as always, to all of my guests. Don't forget, you can download every episode right now from redextra.ie. Kieran McDonough was the producer, and we'll catch you on the next one.
The only show in town for Cork business. Red Business.